Joining us right now, one of our longtime close friends, and we call him the Drive CIA guy, former CIA analyst for many years. Mel Goodman is back with us. Mel, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. The CIA just approved my manuscript after 11 months.
Oh,
can
nice.
Can you believe that anyone can read that slowly? It didn't take me much more than that to write it.
Well, I've been kind of busy lately, apparently.
Well, that's true. They've been out there wiretapping and photographing us with our microwaves,
yeah,
it turns out.
Exactly. You know, I was just telling someone the other day about how much we appreciate you and what you do and what you've done for us in all these years. And I was saying one of the things that I thought was so cool about you, and this was when we were in D.C., and we all had lunch.
Lunch we had.
Yeah. And you and I were sitting at one end of the table and doing, you and I were pretty much one-on-one and everyone else was talking about something else. But instead of talking about all this heavy-duty stuff like we do on the radio, you and I talked almost exclusively about comedy and late-night TV. It was great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think what Trump has done for late-night TV is fantastic. I'm watching Trevor Noah regularly.
Yeah.
I have been watching Trevor Noah.
Yeah, same here. And Colbert is number one now.
Colbert is making a comeback.
Yeah.
I had stopped watching him because I was so disappointed after the Colbert Report essentially folded.
Yeah. Well, now he's beating Jimmy Fallon because of the monologue on Trump every night.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's gone back almost to his old persona, which is to me much more effective than his entertainment persona.
I agree completely.
I think he's basically a very shy individual, and I think this is a forced effort for him, no matter what persona it is.
Yeah, but he nails that monologue, and the staff writers are great.
He's almost as funny as the Donald.
Well, you're a longtime CIA guy, Mel. What approximately was the year when we learned that microwaves could tap our houses and take photos of us?
We've known for years that when your cell phone is off, it isn't.
Yeah.
And that your computer is never off. You can't take a cell phone into the CIA building. I don't know a lot about microwaves, but I know that someone can drive your smart car for you if they try hard enough. We've known that. But I like all the conspiracy. You know, this guy is the master of conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Because when you start really with the birther movement, and he was a major proponent of, who knows where Obama was born, and then it was the Muslim Americans who were cheering on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, he said that Scalia was probably murdered. And that the link of Ted Cruz's father to having some role in the assassination of JFK.
Yeah.
And he did. There was really something ugly, and of course he indulges these ugly conspiracies. The Vince Foster suicide, which I thought was very tragic, he said that was fishy. The illegal votes, the 3 million illegal votes, in which he would have defeated Hillary Clinton with a popular vote. And now this wiretapping story, and it's interesting, it's typical of all these other conspiracy theories, they come a day or two after bad news. You know, it was on March the 2nd that Sessions, we learned, lied about meeting with Kislyak, the Russian ambassador. So 2 days later, on March the 4th, it's how low has Obama gone to tap with a double P my phones. What a bad or sick guy he is. So it doesn't end, but, the sad thing to me is, it's like the fact that 62 million people voted for this person, is that there's still a lot of Americans who trust him more than they trust the news media. And I think the news media has, particularly the mainstream press, has created some problems for itself over the years. But if he's as credible as the media, that's a new level of cynicism in America, and I think it's just so incredibly corrosive of all of our institutions. What we have now, I think, is a crisis in public trust of our institutions. And he's making it worse, and in some respects getting away with it. Now, I do think the wiretapping charge, he's gone too far this time. I think he's in trouble this time. Remember, today was the deadline for producing evidence.
Yeah, and now the DOJ's told the committee, the congressional committee, they need more time.
They're going to find
now that the microwave is in the story. Yeah,
yeah. Well, did you hear her response to that one when she was pressed about the microwave that was also a camera? She said, "I'm not Inspector Gadget."
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Now, this was Kellyanne Conway. If you missed it, folks, Kellyanne Conway this morning was being interviewed, and she suggested that the former president's surveillance effort could have employed any number of devices, even a microwave oven. Then she quickly clarified that she was not, in fact, accusing Barack Obama of spying via a kitchen appliance.
Yeah. But I liked her other line, too. She also said, I'm not in a job that has evidence.
Yeah, right.
Well, we know that.
can you tell my listeners, I mean, how does this work with wiretapping? I mean, it's pretty confusing, but I mean, the president.
Well, let me simplify it, and yeah. I hope I'm not oversimplifying it. But you can only get a wiretap for one of two reasons: either there's a criminal wiretap, or there's a national security wiretap. And in both cases, the Department of Justice has to create the case, not the president. The president, on his authority, cannot wiretap anyone.
Right.
But a Justice Department has to go to a federal court in the case of a criminal wiretap, or to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court in the case of a national security wiretap. Now, if they got such an approval, if such a warrant was granted for a wiretap, that means there was good reason to think that a law had been broken. So I think Trump has really gone down the wrong road on this one, because he's suggested that there's some implications in terms of his behavior. Now, if he's making it all up, you can't sue him for libel, because the president is exempt from libel laws. But, you know, what are high crimes and misdemeanors? No one's ever really defined for me what a high crime and misdemeanor is, but accusing your predecessor of wiretapping is the worst charge any president has ever made about his predecessor. I can't think of anything comparable to that. And we've had some pretty ugly exchanges over the years between, you know, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. And yeah. Clearly Eisenhower and Truman didn't like each other. They didn't speak driving to the inauguration. And Eisenhower and Kennedy. Eisenhower was furious with Kennedy's inaugural address about the torch being passed to a new and younger generation.
Really?
That was true. Well, it was true, but it was, I don't think it was a very nice thing to say with Eisenhower in the House.
Yeah, I guess.
Especially since he was a legitimate war hero, among other things. But this is, you know, it's the cynicism that I find corrosive, because, you know, when I think of, you know, I lecture a lot about the Soviet Union. That is my first specialty, and it was cynicism that I think brought down the Soviet Union, that people no longer believe their leaders. Well, who in the hell are we supposed to believe now? You know, when I lecture out there now, people are very confused, and Trump has done a good job of creating this kind of chaos and confusion, because whenever a story comes up that's damaging to him, he changes the subject. He shifts gears, and he's been doing this effectively, I think. Even though I do hope the wiretapping thing may cause some reconsideration on his part, because there's nothing there. They're not going to find anything.
No.
James Comey has already tried to get the Justice Department to disavow it. It's interesting that they won't. James Clapper, who has gone on national television to say there's no evidence whatsoever of a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. And by the way, I was talking to some of my old friends at the Defense Intelligence Agency, and they filled me in on the details of the General Flynn versus General Clapper situation. Apparently, those two detest each other. So the problem between Clapper and Flynn is just strictly personal. And when Clapper fired Flynn in 2014, it was Clapper who went to the White House, and Obama agreed, and then the order was given to the Joint Chiefs of Staff to get Flynn out of the Defense Intelligence Agency. They had a party over at the DIA, and they had another party when Flynn was forced to retire, was actually fired by Trump over his deceit with regard to contacts with the Russians. And then the foreign agent lobbying issue comes up, you know, the money he was taking from the Turkish government and the editorials he was writing to enhance the status of Erdogan, who's a real authoritarian leader. And then what is really complicated is this, and I'm getting this a lot in questions when I go out to speak, the deep state. You know, this, I think this is an incredible myth, but it's taken root to a certain extent. You know, is there a deep state? Is there a CIA that's trying to undercut the president? Is there a CIA that's leaking intelligence? You know, and what I tell people is, you know, the United States is the only ship of state that leaks from the top. You know, leaks rarely come from the CIA. Most leaks come from the White House. And this was true in all administrations. There were people that, for example, favorite journalists that people such as Henry Kissinger had if he wanted to release certain kinds of information. Brzezinski did the same thing when he was National Security Advisor for Jimmy Carter. And this goes back to the days when the Georgetown set in Washington had such close ties between journalists like Joseph Kraft and Stuart Alsop and CIA directors like Alan Dulles and Richard Helms. So these leaks aren't coming from the CIA. I don't think they're coming from the intelligence community. A lot of it, I think, is coming from the White House. There are incredible disputes going on in the White House.
Yeah, that's what we hear.
Incredible disarray. And then you have a Secretary of State who's essentially vanished, never speaks, holds no press conferences, doesn't take part in high-level discussions with heads of state who come to the White House.
Yeah, I heard yesterday that the son-in-law is a lot of these foreign people want to meet with him and not Tillerson.
Well, they know that Kushner and Bannon and Stephen Miller, Bannon's deputy, have access to the president, whereas Rex Tillerson rarely sees the president.
Right.
And I was talking to someone today who came out of a meeting at the State Department, and they're worried over there because of the 37% cut in the budget, which I think they've gotten. They feel they've gotten this reduced to 31%. But Tillerson isn't doing anything for them. The battle is being waged by Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who realize you can't do that to the diplomatic corps.
Yeah.
You know, is the Secretary of Defense. Former General Mattis has said, you cut the State Department and you better give me more funding because we're going to be involved in more wars. And I don't think Trump understands any of this, or he wants to essentially kill the State Department and diplomacy. Tillerson has no staff. He has, in terms of the slots, there are slots for two deputies, four or five undersecretaries, and 14 to 16 assistant secretaries. Not one of them has been filled, and these are all positions that require confirmation. In fact, if you look at the in total government, there are over 500 important positions that require confirmation where no one has been nominated. You know, for Trump to blame, and particularly Sean Spicer, his press secretary, to blame the slow rolling by Democrats in the confirmation process, that's nonsense. These people haven't been nominated.
Yeah.
These slots have been unfilled intentionally.
Hmm. Well,
so, It took
the CIA 11 months to read your book. Now they've okayed it. How many, were there a lot of changes you had to make? Or?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's a 360-page book. There were 13 pages where they wanted changes. 10 of the 13 pages were just like a word or two. On the other three pages, there were actually one sentence on each of those three pages that they wanted removed. Now, I would argue none of it was classified, none of it was sensitive, and I would file a reclama, but frankly, that would just delay the process. So
right.
I'm taking all of their redactions, and believe me, they were things that could not be called classified by any institution other than the CIA. No, it's things you can read about in mystery novels and read about in the daily press.
Wow.
But it does mean the book will come out in May, and it means I'll be coming out there at some point because City Lights and WPFW want to do some promotion.
Cool.
And I thought maybe I could come on the air in your studio out there.
Hell yeah, that would be great. And then we can
Let you know the timing.
Okay, and then we can go out to dinner afterwards and talk about comedy.
Sounds good.
Give us a capsulized version of what the book's about and when you think it might be out.
I've been scheduling events now. It should be out by May the 18th.
Okay.
That's the date that Amazon has now posted because I've accepted my first book talk on May the 20th. And it's essentially a political memoir of why someone who had been with the government for 42 years with security clearances, because I've been in the Army, the State Department, the CIA, the Defense Department, why would someone become a contrarian? Why would someone become a dissident? Essentially, why would someone become a whistleblower? And the book is called, you know, Whistleblower at the CIA, The Path to Dissent.
Right.
And it deals with my testimony against Robert Gates when he was nominated to be CIA director in 1991. And I have a very frank discussion of the field of journalism and how journalism really hasn't done the kind of digging that's needed to get these stories out because they don't want to compromise their relation with key sources. So I talk about the journalists who really do the work, people like Seymour Hersh, James Risen of the New York Times, Greg Miller to a certain extent, at the Washington Post, but I also talk about apologists for the CIA, such as Walter Pincus and David Ignatius.
I remember those names.
Yeah, at the Washington Post.
Yeah.
You know, Ignatius has been an apologist for the CIA for 20 years, and I explain what that's all about. And it gets into the politics of intelligence. You know, what are these intelligence failures, particularly the ones that involve politicization? How was the CIA turned around by the White House to basically create fake news to justify going to war against Iraq, a total fool's errand that could not be justified, but yet the CIA went along with pressure from Dick Cheney, who traveled to the CIA on 10 or 12 occasions to get this phony intelligence. And then, of course, my own experience in dealing with Gates in the 1980s, the phony intelligence on the Soviet Union. You know, when the Soviet Union was collapsing, here was Reagan referring to them as an evil empire, and Gates trying to give them the intelligence to show that the Soviet Union was 10 feet tall. And, of course, then in 1991, they disappear entirely. So it gets into a lot of material that's never been discussed before. There have been a lot of books by operatives about covert actions and operations, but this is an unusual book, I think, in terms of it's an analytic a view from an analyst of how intelligence analysis is produced at the CIA. So I think your audience would be interested in this.
Yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully we will see you in May out here, and we'll talk to you before then. The great Mel Goodman, longtime Drive, a Hall of Famer, it's always such a pleasure, sir. I can't wait to
thank
see you again. And
keep up the good work.
Thank you. All right, we'll talk soon.
Bye now.
All right.